I'm sure you'll find something.
Your transformation, your latest video.
Okay, yeah, well, that was, I was really wondering how it was going to be received, the film, Transformation. I put a lot of information in there which may be a little bit unsettling to people.
Yeah,
so it's just something that I really wanted to do. And I really wanted people in the first part of the film to kind of question their history a little bit, just to realize that questions exist. And that, you know, we perhaps need to answer these questions. I mean, some of the things I was asking, like, you know, how do we come up with metal? Would you come up with metal if you were a hunter and gatherer?
Not a chance, actually. That's a question I asked myself many times. I studied in Germany. I'm actually Irish. I've been away in Germany and Europe, Switzerland many years, and I now moved back to Ireland, but I'm familiar with technology myself. But I still, with my knowledge, do not have the means to make any of this equipment that's around me with my bare hands.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. You know, where does it all come from? Where did technology come from?
Exactly.
I mean, sure, maybe some guy threw a rock in a fire one day and a bit of metal melted out and all this sort of stuff. But that's not the point. The point is that what we've been told about history is completely wrong. I wrote a book that proved this back in 2005 called Earth's Forbidden Secrets. But the thing is, you know, they tell us, we started off as, you know, hunters and gatherers in these tribal cultures, and we gradually became civilized. Well, in that time frame, in that series of events that modern history gives us, or mainstream history gives us, where did they come up with metals? Why would they come up with metals? If they were hunters and gatherers and they're just supporting their families and they're living in these tribal cultures, why would they even think that they needed metal?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And
if you look at things like the Indian text and the Indian teachings, you find that it's the discovery of iron, that's the beginning of the downfall of man. It happens every cycle.
This is the Vedas.
How did all this happen, you know?
Yeah. Is this in the Vedas?
Yeah. You know, like they always talk about, like, the Yugas. The beginning of Kali Yuga is when the discovery of iron, basically.
Right.
You know,
okay.
Because it's the discovery of iron that brings about things such as the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
And nuclear reactors and all the stuff that we've got now, cars and this modern transport system and the oil-based culture and all this sort of stuff. So.
Yeah, you actually asked this question in Transformation, you know, what if you could change the world? Would you? Would you actually change it? And that set a spark off in me, you know, as you said, with nuclear weapons and all this technology we have. Where do these ideas actually come from? Because
how did this become part of our psyche?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, and the question was, what if you could change the world by changing your perspective of it? Because if you really change your perspective and start looking at the world in this manner and just start asking these questions, then it does change your perspective of the world, and it's that inner change, that changing of your perspective of reality around you, that's the beginning. That's the first step. You've got to change your perspective of what the world is.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, so that's what I was asking in the first section of the film, and then I just sort of went on through the transhumanist thing, which sort of indicates where they're taking us. I mean, if you look at all the advertising, if you look at the movies, you look at the subtext that's happening all throughout movies and advertising and the pop culture, it's all leading towards transgenderism and transhumanism.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which are two in the, you know, one and the same thing, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
you need to
break down that barrier between the genders in order to bring about this transhumanist culture.
And it's
where they're going. And they tell us that's where they're going. I mean, Ray Kurzweil puts out his film and says, hey, this is what we want to do. We basically want to assimilate the universe so we can create God. These people are mad. I mean, they're insane. Even the thought of sending nanoparticulates out into the universe to just assimilate everything you find, it's absurd. And they tell you what they're doing all the way through it. The film that came out recently, The Hunger Games, was all basically the same thing. Agenda 21, mega cities connected by monorails, people living in abject poverty in the surrounding regions. The only thing wrong with the film was that the people who lived in the surrounding regions still looked human.
Right.
But what they want to do is they want to merge this into this subculture, this little...
What was that movie called again, Max?
People, you know?
What was that movie called again? Okay, I haven't come across it.
It's a new film that came out, and it basically describes Agenda 21. You've got this effeminate, transgendic culture living in big cities. You've got a class of overlords, like the Rothschilds, if you will, you know.
Yeah.
The rich mega controllers at the very top who control the city. The city collects resources from the outlying regions. These people live in abject poverty. And they've got game arenas where they run blood sports and the game arena is the ground's full of nanotechnology. You can create anything you want out of it. You know, create a dog, come out of the ground here and control the sky and control everything.
Well, here in Ireland, funnily enough, we got news this week of one of these smart cities being developed near Athlone in the center of Ireland from a Chinese, some sort of Chinese financing. That's what the government is telling us anyway. It looks like one of these smart cities, you know, where people, they take people basically off the land out into smart zones and control them.
Well, you know, it's all presented to the people as being very attractive. It's all these cities that basically voice activated and all this sort of stuff, facial recognition, voice recognition. It's all presented to you as this great modern dream, and it could be wonderful. All this sort of stuff could be really good. It could really, really serve humanity. But it's being put in place in such a manner, you know, in a way that it's not going to serve humanity. It's all about a control grid, as you say.
It's an open prison. We're like free range.
All of this is leading towards transhumanism. It's all part of the same agenda.
Yeah. And you also said in the documentary that democracy requires civil disobedience. It's a very, very interesting point.
Well, yeah, Howard Zinn. Howard Zinn was a remarkable man, and it does require civil disobedience. If it isn't run with the consent, everything that the government does, if it doesn't have the consent of the people, then it's not a democracy. You know, we're told that a democratic government is a government of the people, for the people, by the people. Now, I'm not any fan of democracy. Plato believed that democracy was the worst form of government you could have because in a democracy, 51% of the people control the other 49% of the people.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need constitutional republics that have democratic systems incorporated within those republics. That's what I believe. I don't know what you'd call it. I'm not really into any isms. But yeah, in a constitutional republic, everyone has specific unalienable rights that cannot be taken from them.
That's right.
You know, the right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, all this sort of stuff.
Sovereignty,
you know, so
our individual sovereignty, basically.
Well, basically, yeah, everybody has that. But then if you want to build a bridge or do this or do that or whatever, we can have a referendum. That's a democratic method of deciding, you know, if the people, you know, want to build a bridge or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But you need to have basic rules in place of do no harm is the basis of all of it. You know, do no harm to your environment, do no harm to the people, you know, serve the creation that you live in, you know. I mean, the whole system we've got is completely flawed and, you know, democracy has its place, but not as a system of government. But anyway, so even in a democracy, even in what we've got, the only way the people can actually control the government in any way or stand up against whatever pieces of legislation the government want to bring in and claim to be law is through civil disobedience. And so that's why people need to understand the power of this. And in order to do that, they need to understand the power of themselves. And that's what they've been led away from.
Their individual sovereignty, that they can say, no, we don't consent to this. I do not consent. You do not have my consent.
Well, yeah, but the problem is, as I said, is people don't have the power within them to do that. They're in fear. They're in fear of being who and what they are. They forget that they are a living, breathing man. They're not a name. They're not a number.
That's true.
The people that are doing this, they're just men. They're just flesh and blood, the same as us. Mm-hmm. There's no difference.
But people are luckily waking up to this now.
Well, they are because we employ these people to do the opposite of what they're doing.
Yeah.
So and they're going to keep doing it until we hold them accountable for their actions because no one else is going to hold them accountable. You know, we see government corruption. We think, oh, gee, the government better act to fix that. Well, hang on a minute. You know, you're never going to get them to investigate themselves.
Yeah.
It's like you telling me, you're claiming that I stole money from you, and I say, oh, no worries, I'll investigate that for you and get back to you with the result.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't investigate yourself. You know, someone who's accused of a crime can't investigate themselves. And these governments are basically stealing everything, and then they're investigating themselves about it. And we're not doing anything about it because we've forgotten that they're actually our employees.
Employees, yeah. But luckily, people are now waking up to this. I do see solutions there, but like things like, as you discussed in your documentary, chemtrails and Morgellons. Like this area, this is quite scary actually when you see what's actually going on. what we are mutating into, what they are trying to do with us. Like, do you see any solutions for this?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, people just aren't noticing this. It's going on around them. There's so many rabbit holes they're going down, and they're not looking. And if you step back and look at the bigger picture and try to think, well, okay, there's all of this stuff going on. You know, we've got this Morgellon syndrome. We've got chemtrails. We've got HARP. Mm-hmm. We've got all the vaccinations. We've got all the GM food.
Yeah.
You know, what's actually going on here? How does it all fit together? And then you look at a thing like Kurzweil's film, and you see this transhumanist agenda. Then you see what they're telling you in the subtext of all the movies and all the TV shows and everything. The scenario that they're creating in people's minds. And then you have a look at the drop in the male sperm count, the drop in estrogen in women and the amount of estrogen that's been putting into food and stuff. And it's amazing. Everything that's going on, it's absolutely amazing. And when you put it all together, what you get is this transhumanist agenda. And it's right there. It's in front of everybody's faces. And they're telling you what they're doing. And they're preparing people for it with all of this subtext in movies, implants, all of this digital culture, smart meters, the whole lot. You've got Bill Gates there saying that we want to set up a satellite grid to control agriculture, to fix world hunger, right? They want a satellite grid of GM food all over the world. So they can keep track of what everybody's growing. That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
Totally wipes out any organic food, makes you grow GM food, mm-hmm. and they genetically manipulate everything. And they're setting the whole thing up right now. It's right there in everybody's faces.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't put in a satellite grid and grow GM to fix world hunger. You take the interest off money so that people aren't in a state of shortage. That gets rid of your world hunger straight away.
Exactly.
We can feed the world right now, but we can't afford to because we've got a money-based system.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And we have certain corporations that are out there and they're actually patenting plants. I saw house plants last week with a plant passport number on them. An official EU plant passport number, which recognizes them. It's absolutely scary. I came back to an agricultural country which I was born in, that's Ireland, and we have no produce growing around us, Max, here. The fields are full of grass.
They're taking all the food production offshore from everybody. So you'll have, you know, like Australia grows a lot of China's food and all this sort of, but we don't get it here, you know.
Yeah.
But all of this stuff's been taken offshore. All the businesses that you need to function as a society and to be self-sufficient are being taken away from you. So it creates interdependency between countries.
Outsourcing.
So no country can survive without another country.
Yeah.
It's all based on import and export.
Exactly.
So we're growing apples in England and sending them across the world to America, you know, and then England's importing their apples from Australia and stuff like this.
I picked apples in Hawke's Bay in New Zealand in 1997, bought them 8 months later in a local supermarket in the south of Germany. And then 8 months later, I was home in Ireland and I bought Lake Constance German apples in Ireland, for example.
Exactly. Exactly.
Absolutely ridiculous.
They're doing all of this stuff just to feed the import-export business, and they're doing it to remove self-sufficiency from each country, to remove economic sovereignty from each country, every country is interdependent. And this is how the global New World Order has been created. This is what the New World Order is. It's a global company, a global corporation.
Yeah, it's a corporation.
It's corporatism, full-blown corporatism. That's what it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's what they're putting in place. Doing a good job of it as well, but people are waking up to it. And
people are starting to understand now, Max. People are starting to understand that even their own governments are actual corporations. This is information that came to me very recently. It's actually part of a presentation that I do. I do explain to people that if you go onto a website, an English website called Dun & Bradstreet, and you type in the Republic of Ireland, a corporation pops up, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's all corporate. The whole thing's corporate. All of our governments are corporations, and the whole thing that they're putting in place is a corporation. And what we're seeing with all these wars are basically hostile takeovers of other countries.
Exactly.
That's all they are. It's just incorporating people into the corporation, installing these central banking systems
and
all
over
the world
that
enslave all the population to fictional debt. And it's very clever the way it's going, but people are waking up. We don't have a choice. I mean, things are getting so in your face now. That's the thing with fascism. The more, you know, it becomes obvious eventually. It becomes so in your face that you can't help but see it. And then you have the opportunity to do something about it. And you have the duty to do something about it as well.
Act locally and think globally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the thing is, though, you know, violent revolution, we don't need violent revolution. This is what's being pushed by people, and it's what's happened in the past when we've seen this. But what we've got in history now is a really unique moment, because we've got people who are spiritually awake as well. People who are starting to realize the power that they have as human beings, as a flesh and blood man, answerable only to God, the Creator, whatever they perceive is there. That is really the ultimate thing for them. There's nothing else between them and their Creator. And people are starting to realize this, and they're starting to be able to stand in their power and realize that all of these rules that are in place that are affecting their lives and that are being used to destroy the planet only exist on paper. They're not real. Exactly. They do harm to the planet. They do harm to people. They do harm to society itself. So in the breach of an actual law, there's an injured party. There always has to be an injured party in the breach of an actual law. And yet if you breach a statute and you're prosecuted for it, the only injured party is you. So the government has injured you because you broke one of their rules. So who's broke the law here? The government has. The police have.
Can I ask you, Max, have you heard of the idea of civil or criminal?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's something that's been employed an awful lot in the courts in this country, and it's very frustrating for the powers that be when they actually come across that. They don't know how to deal with that, because, you mean, you are separating out, you know, the difference between is there an injured party, you know, or are we talking about statutes here, which is contracts? So what are we talking about here?
Absolutely. If you're a flesh and blood man, answerable only to God, that flesh, you're a body of living flesh with blood flowing in your veins, well, how are you liable for the breach of a statute? You know, you just need to seek remedy from the court, because obviously you've been brought there for the wrong reasons. You know.
Yeah, the problems that we have in this country, Max, is that they've tied in, and it's the same in your country. They've interweaved the criminal laws with statutes, the Criminal Justice Act 1990 whatever, you know, and that's how they tied it all up. Unless you actually know how to behave and conduct yourself in court, really you are at a loss, because you just don't understand what's going on, you know.
Oh, absolutely. It's designed that way, you know. It's designed that way. But, you know, people are waking up to it. But I still believe that the best hope we've got is to connect with the people around us, because we need this power of community.
Exactly.
You know, the whole community is divided. It's been designed to be divided, and people are taught this division from birth. You know, it's all about supporting this meme, this idea that this system is real. The indoctrination, social indoctrination, educational indoctrination, the grading system, everything that is in our education system, it just is designed to program people to believe that this is how reality works, that this meme that enslaves us, basically, is real. But it's not. It only exists on paper. What's real is the people, and we've forgotten that.
Yeah. It's even geographical here, you know. What side of the river do you come from? What football team do you follow? And, you know, divide and conquer.
Well, all of that's tribal. That all brings out people's tribal instincts, things like football teams, you know, different team colours at school. You know, they get you to belong to a clan, to belong to a tribe, to see yourself as being different from those around
feeling
you.
Feeling you're part of
we're
a
in
group.
We're in the red team. We're different to those in the gold team, you know.
Yeah.
You know? And we're better than them, you know. It's all this competition thing, you know. And it also stimulates our need for a tribal culture. That's basically what football's about. Mm-hmm. It satisfies people's tribal instincts to go there and shout at the name of their team, you know. And these guys are just out there kicking a ball around a field, and they're paid millions of dollars to do it because of this huge distraction that it creates in the human psyche. You know?
Max, can I ask you, have you heard of a man called Michael Tesarian?
Yeah, I've heard of Michael Tesarian. I've actually had dinner with him when he was out here.
Oh, very good, because I was only listening to one of his podcasts there about the origins of mankind, which I find absolutely fascinating. I find the man very interesting because he's not just all love and light, which, you know, I don't go for that stuff. I mean, the guy is very grounded, and he can quote any of the research that he's done, you know. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience with him?
He's a good researcher.
Could you tell us a bit about your experience with Michael?
Well, I met him that once for dinner. It was just kind of, there was a lot of people there, and it was just, we were all having dinner together at a restaurant here in Byron Bay. I went to see his talk on the Gold Coast when he was out here.
Okay.
That was good.
Okay, and where does that fit in with your ideology?
Well, yeah, he does a lot of good research. I mean, a lot of it parallels mine, a lot of it parallels other people. So you get to a certain point when you're researching that, I mean, the truth really only goes in one direction.
Exactly.
And everybody coming across the same things eventually.
Yeah, we'll cross over then, obviously.
Yeah, it all ends up crossing over unless you're right out there on some limb somewhere and you're not actually looking at the right things. But it's good seeing things like Michael's research because it confirms some of the stuff that I've come up with. And then you look at other people around the world, and there's all sorts of people doing it. Ben Stewart, some of his research is great, and it's confirmed mine. Ben and I have worked closely together on a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
And
Very interesting, it's good.
I'm just curious, Max, did you go to a mainstream school, or did you go to college, or did you, you know, were you not interested in the standard educational system in Australia?
Well, look, I got into lots of trouble at school for arguing with my teachers. I took lots of time off school.
Asking questions.
I left halfway through high school. For the last year that I was at high school, I didn't actually attend any of the classes. I spent most of my time in the school library, just reading history books and educating myself.
That's very strange because that's actually parallel reality to one of the main people with TNS Radio, Vinnie Byrne. He had the exact same experience himself. He left school, I think, was about 14 years of age, and he went into a library and was just given textbooks and studied himself for his insert and his leaving cert.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I did. I just didn't get along with any of my teachers. I used to question what they were teaching me, and they'd teach me something as a fact, and I'd say, excuse me, I've just read a book that gives a completely different account of what you've just said. And you should be presenting that to the class as the most accepted theory, you know, most commonly accepted theory. But you should also be offering them the other side of the story, you know. You're just teaching this as an out-and-out fact, and it's actually very questionable. Mm-hmm. Now, do you want to get up and teach the class? I say, yeah, okay. And I'd get up and I'd start talking about it. They'd send me up the office, and I'd get the cane, and, you know, I ended up with my desk outside the principal's office. The last time I was at school in Adelaide, I had my own desk outside the principal's office because none of the classes had had me.
They must have been very nice to you in Australia. I think it would have been a lot harsher here in Ireland.
Yeah, well, I went to like three different schools or four different schools. So, yeah, it was kind of weird. But I just left halfway through my exams one day. I just said, I've had enough of this, just walked out. And never looked back. Educated myself from that point on.
Well, you probably did yourself a huge favor there, Max, and everyone that listens to your show, because it sent you down a completely different route than what you would normally might have done, because you're obviously a very clever guy and you probably would have went on to university education and become pigeonholed in a specific role, function, skill, career, whatever.
In the machine.
Well, yeah, that's what university does. That's why they call it university, you know, universe, one way, one verse. Just think inside the box, that's it. But people have said to me, Max, you're very well educated. How did you find out all this stuff? Where did you go to school? I say, well, I didn't go to school. They didn't get hold of me. That's how come I know so much.
You
know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You stayed open to life and its experiences.
So, I mean, as you know yourself, that the brain is constantly growing itself. You know, the synapses, they form, you know, other connections with other synapses in the brain, and that what you learn becomes you. That your brain is basically a computer hard drive, and that it's like a magnetic disc hard drive, and that, you know, you learn something and it gets stuck there, and it doesn't really, you know, get taken out again unless you relearn what you've already learned. So you don't have to do that. You're starting with a fresh disc, you know.
Well, yeah, I think you should do that. I think that every time you come across some form of research, you need to, you know, not go down the rabbit hole it's providing, but to step back and see where this research fits on the global stage.
Yeah.
Try to put it all together. Always try to keep a really, really broad perspective of everything that you're hearing mm-hmm. and everything that you're seeing, because there's so many rabbit holes, and people go down these rabbit holes because they want someone to point the finger at.
That's the problem. You know? That's the problem. You have to keep yourself grounded, don't you?
Yeah, they're not stepping back and looking at the whole thing. Okay, well, what we're basically seeing all around the world in all of our countries is a corporate consolidation is what we're seeing. they're just consolidating their resources, and the corporation's becoming more and more visible, more and more in your face. And you can then you've got to think, okay, well, where's it going? Where's it leading? And how do we prevent it from going in the direction that it's going? And really the way we prevent it is through common unity, through connecting with our neighbourhood and connecting with the people. We're only going to do that if we respect others. So, you know, stop going and arguing with people and screaming fear and all this sort of stuff. Just connect with them. Break that barrier. Break that ice.
Exactly.
You know,
but it's
get to know them. That yeah, because they're just like you. Yeah. And they're all divided from each other because they've been trained to be that way. Just so that, you've got to really look at things from, you've got to change your perspective. Change your perspective of how the world works. Because when you can see that everybody around you is exactly the same as yourself in Lakesh, then you can see how to get through to them, and you can see how to break down these barriers, and you can see what would happen if we did break down these barriers.
Yeah.
We'd change the world in 3 seconds, you know.
Exactly.
It really is so simple, but people just can't seem to see it.
I've been trying to live this ideology for the last 15 years, and people seem to just trot on me, you know, like people just brush off and go, "Well, you're nuts, you know, what are you on about?" But now slowly people are coming to the realization, but not everybody. Like, how do you get everybody to just realize the life that's around them and what they actually have and where they are?
And that it's
all
by
irrelevant.
Example.
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
You've got to do that. You've got to be like I'm really happy and pleasured that I know the stuff that I know, that I can see how the world works, because now I can see the solution. And to me, it's so simple. The solution is so simple. And people go, "Oh, you're never going to, you're like, you know, John Lennon saying you can fix the world with love." Well, in a way you can. And I'm not saying about how we all get in a state and meditate. It's when we suddenly see each other as valid. Stop seeing the people around you as a threat to your little box view of reality. And
yeah,
most people have these little box views. They only see reality from their perspective, which is natural. Of course, you only see it from your perspective, but we don't perceive other people's perspectives to be valid.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone wants to go out and be the voice in the crowd. I want you to listen to me when I'm talking, but I'm not prepared to listen to you when you're talking. And everybody thinks that way. So nothing ever gets communicated.
That's why we have
our own little box, you know.
Yeah,
no
that's
one
why
sees
we have,
each other as valid.
Yeah, that's why we have two ears, isn't it, and one mouth, that we should actually listen to more than what we actually say.
Yeah, well, that absolutely makes sense. You know, someone's always got a gift for you if you're prepared to listen to them. They've always got a perspective that you need that will help you if you can only give that perspective the validation that it needs, you know?
Everybody has got a piece of genius in them, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody does.
I worked with special needs people for 5 years, and I really realized everybody's got genius in them. You just have to look for it. And when you look for it, you'll actually find it. And
it's there.
It's
absolutely there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's sorry, when I'm talking, you're sort of cutting out a little bit, so it's hard to hear sometimes when you've stopped. So
sorry about that, Max.
If I've been talking over you sometimes, it's because I think that you've stopped.
No problem. You're fine.
Everybody does have a piece of genius in them. And the thing is that everybody has within them the spark, the essence of life, the sentience that gives them animation, that makes them able to walk and talk and see and hear, the consciousness that exists within them. And that's exactly the same as the spark in you. It's exactly the same spark that comes from exactly the same source. So they are just as valid as you.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can see this, and we can see that the world could be completely different if we were not so divided from each other, well, there's the solution. You know, see, everything about this society, everything about the grading system, even cutting people off as families and keeping them in these little boxes with fences around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this family doesn't mingle with that family. You know, there's no community in it. There's no, you know, none of this common unity among the people anymore that there always used to be. Things like the Anastasia books, if you look at how society existed in Vedic times, these wonderful, thriving communities of people that all had their own space for their own life and their own village with the partner of their choice for life,
mm-hmm.
but all worked together as this wonderful, interactive community. That's how humanity used to be. So how did we come up with this? Now, someone injected fear into the situation. They injected scarcity into the situation, and they injected division into the situation.
Sounds like a work of the psychopath.
Well, it is. That's the thing. We've got psychopaths who have climbed to the top of our society because this is what psychopaths do. Psychopaths like to control others.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a guy called Thomas Sheridan on the show last week who's written two books, A Labyrinth of a Psychopath and Defeated Demons. Have you heard of Thomas Sheridan?
No, I haven't actually.
Yeah,
sounds interesting.
Yeah, he's written two books about it. He originally said that he wanted to write some sort of a horror fiction novel about people that he experienced when he was working over in America. He was a graphic artist, and he was working in, Lehman Brothers?
He worked for Lehman Brothers and Goldman Sachs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he came across like a guy who actually admitted he was a clinical psychopath. He actually did a test on him. You know?
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. So you've got these people, and they've maneuvered themselves into positions of control all throughout our society, throughout our governments. I mean, look at politicians. They climb over themselves to get the gig.
Absolutely.
Elect me. Yeah. I want to be the top dog. Yeah. Why? Would you want the gig? Do you want to control everybody else? I couldn't stand being prime minister. I just would not want to know about it.
Yeah.
So how can these people climb over themselves to get into a position where they're in control of other people, in control of a whole nation? Because they're psychopaths.
According to Thomas Sheridan, that they have a completely different brain structure than the average human being. You know, it's very, very different. It's the reptilian brain, which is the most ancient part of the mind, and that's what's activated an awful lot of the time is the fight or flight syndrome, and that's where they're based. Most of their life experience comes from the reptilian part of the brain, not the prefrontal cortex and other parts of the brain that are more modern in human evolution, and that they're predators. And that they don't have any empathy. It doesn't exist. And that all they want to do is to find someone that they can prey on. I can tell you one thing, I've met quite a few of these people in my years.
Oh, look, they're everywhere. They're all, I mean, these are usually the people who are in control of large corporations and in control of countries, in control of governments, you know, because that's just where they want to be. Psychopaths will always maneuver themselves into a position where they control others because that's how they get their energy. That's where they get it from. They harvest the energy of others. You know, it exists
they're
on
energy
all sorts
vampires.
Of levels of the psyche, you know?
Yeah.
And what you find is that when you have psychopaths who are in control of countries and in control of large corporations, then their morality or lack of morality becomes the morality of the organization or becomes the morality of the country. So you have people who aren't psychopaths who have to work within this psychopathic structure, which sort of activates this sociopathic nature within people. It turns all of society into basically a sociopathic culture. So you've got situations where you've got a police officer coming and throwing you out of your house saying he feels terrible about doing it, but he has no choice because it says on this piece of paper that he has to throw you out.
Yeah.
And you're going to go and freeze to death, and I'm so sorry about that, but I feel terrible about it, but I don't have a choice. Well, that's pathological thinking.
Yeah.
Because the rules that he's forced to obey affect his mind like a pathogen because he does not know that he's operating within a psychopathic system, a system that's been created by psychopaths. See, the only way to free yourself of this pathological thinking is to realize that this is a psychopathic system created by psychopaths that's training you to think pathologically.
Mm-hmm.
That way you can free yourself from it. Mm. You think, well, hang on, I've got to throw you out of your house. Well, instead of doing that, I should go and find who wrote this law and go up the food chain and eliminate these people from any system of power.
Yeah.
Because this series of laws and series of rules have made humanity expendable in order to serve the system.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore the system is flawed. But they don't think like that because they're not aware of this pathological thinking that's been ingrained into them. You see what I'm saying?
Paul, how many laws were passed into, many statutes were passed into law in Ireland there? Last year,
I think 728 new legislation, you know, new acts of legislation.
Yeah.
Mostly from Europe, Max.
Yeah. Well, see, it's all becoming the one thing. See, when you get pieces of legislation passed in one country, they go, aha, that's how it works. Now we'll extrapolate it out. So they try it in all countries.
Yeah.
Every country is a testing ground for new legislation until they find what works and they import it into your country. We've had So many laws, I don't even know how many Julia Gillard has brought in, but in the time that she's been Prime Minister of Australia, we've had more legislation brought in than any other Prime Minister has brought in.
Wow.
So, and she's the highest paid world leader now. She gets $450,000 a year. She pays herself. That's more than Barack Obama.
Wow.
So yeah, it's happening in all countries across the globe. The only country I can see that's actually doing anything decent is Iceland at the moment.
Because so, I think it's a lot to do with the fact that they're so isolated and that they have such a small population that they could mobilize very quickly.
That. It's a lot easier for Iceland to do that because there's not so many people to rally, you know.
And look at the problems that you have.
It's a great example that they're setting anyway.
And look at the problems that you'd have trying to do the same thing in Australia. I mean, most of the people live on the coast in Australia. It's a massive continent. America as well, the New World. I mean, it's just huge. And there's so many people. What's the population of America now? Is it 350 million now?
Something like that, yeah.
And what's Australia? Australia is what? Is it 60 million?
No, 22 million or something like that.
Oh, is that all?
Not very many.
Wow.
We've got less people here than they have in greater New York.
So we believe we have it. We have an opportunity. There's a window here that we can take advantage of, Max. You know, if we can get a grassroots movement to start, you know, really, really local and get a sort of contagion in a positive way rather than a contagion in a negative way, which is what's happening with the EU and the EU currency. You know, that's, if we get people excited about what's going on within all the different groups throughout the country and that they have a common team, and that's kind of what we're trying to do with the Awaken Ireland movement, is that to allow people to connect with other groups without infringing on their own viability and their own independence and their own vision, and try and connect them under a common team and bring everyone together and just kind of agree on a certain kind of a general kind of consensus of how we'd like to see things to be done, you know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Be careful of infiltrators.
Absolutely. Oh, I've been through Occupy. Know all about that?
Absolutely.
My God.
Oh, look, yeah, I started meetings here a couple of years ago, and it was just basically me and a couple of friends sitting around talking one afternoon, and they said, wow, this was great. We should do it again. Let's have meetings every Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, okay. And we went to the meeting. There were seven of us there talking. In the next week, there were 15 of us, and then the next week, there were 35 of us, and then the next week, there was 60. And then the next week, we got up to like 82 people or something sitting around in the lounge room.
Yeah,
respect.
But, just from word of mouth, we didn't even tell anybody about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just sort of me having meetings with people and talking.
How did that go?
Well, it went really well, and then everybody started hearing about it, and suddenly they realized that these meetings were getting all of this attention. So everybody came with their agendas and they tried to co-opt the meeting. I kept it really open. I kept saying, look, there's no leaders here. We're just talking.
Yeah.
You know, I really wanted to connect with people. Mm-hmm. I was having a lot of people coming and they're going, oh, it's Max. I want to go and listen to Max talk. And I'm saying, well, it's not about hearing me talk. Mm-hmm. It's about we talking together.
Together, yeah.
Talking with you. I don't want to talk at you.
Exactly.
I want to talk with you. I want to hear what your ideas are, because if you've listened to any of my stuff, any of my shows, well, you know what the issues are. And I've put out what I believe my solution is, which is unity, common unity, and for us to connect with each other, say, hey, that's what I'm doing. You know, let's hear what you have to say. And because I was running it like that and I was being very open and very trusting with people, it got co-opted by people who had their agendas, and they divided the whole groups, and it was interesting dichotomy to see how it all went down. But so be very careful of infiltrators, and be very sure of what your objectives are, what you want to achieve with your meetings when you have them.
Well, see, it's not even about us having meetings. It's all what the Awaken movement is about is to find established groups that are already out there, you know. NGOs, non-governmental organizations that are already well established and have a structure already in place. It's just about reaching out and connecting with those already established groups. It's not about trying to set up, you know, a whole new framework and try to reinvent the wheel. It's not about that. It's about, you know, just trying to reach out and connect with people that already have something going on, you know.
Well, that's a really good idea if you can get them to put down their differences between the other groups.
Yeah.
Because as I was saying in the new film Transformation, I said, you know, our response to the problem is always compartmentalized.
Mm-hmm.
Because we believe we have to operate within these parameters. Okay, we've got to form this little group to deal with this problem. We've got to get registered. We've got to get corporated. We've got to You know, we got to, you know, open a bank account. We got to follow all these legal channels in order to get our point across.
Yeah.
No, you don't. What you have to do is realize that you're addressing a symptom, and you need to unite with other groups who are addressing other symptoms so that you can all unite together to address the actual problem.
Exactly.
Because the problem is the system itself. It's not the symptom that you're working on, and you don't need to work within legal parameters that only exist on paper. What you need to do is do what is lawful. And in order to do that, you need to have strong community. That's something that we don't have because we are all forming these little groups that are all addressing symptoms. Mm-hmm. And they're all very important symptoms. And these people are doing a good job, but they're just approaching things from the wrong perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and they're taught that, and they get very defensive about it. Once they start getting somewhere with their little group, and they're the leader of that group, their kind of ego takes over a little bit, and they start seeing other groups as a threat. Oh no, you're taking it away from my issue. You know, my issue is more important than your issue, and it all becomes this sort of, you know, divided dichotomy again. And what people don't realize is that your issue and my issue are related. They are symptoms of the one problem,
exactly.
Which is the system that allows these symptoms to exist.
Nicely put. Nicely put. We do recognize that, you know, the immediate problems that we need to sort out is really the economics. And if we have a guy here in Ireland, Cathal Spellman, someone that's part of the Awaken movement, and he does a talk on a system called social credits, and it's something that you could implement very, very quickly. And the idea of that is to you have a national office that helps to filter a dual currency into the country so that you don't have to go about restructuring the whole international currency that you use. We use the EU currency, the euro here. And that can still happen. They can still be used, and it can be used for so that all of the corporations that work here and that do business here can still trade with other countries and move their goods about. As the social credits then can be issued from the central office, and it's a dividend on based on the back of all of the work that from all of the people that came before. Because Max, we're doing is standing on the shoulders of giants, really, from all of the work that all of our ancestors, our families, you know, that came before us, our grandfathers and their grandfathers before them. You know, all the work that they've already done, we should be benefiting from that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. There's a system called mathematically perfected economy. You've probably heard Mike Montanaro talk on TNS Radio.
Yes, Mike, it's very similar to that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fine. I mean, that's a great system. It really is. And they're actually working on a mandate to get that.
Do you understand that? Because I'd like an explanation of that, a simple explanation of that, if you can give it to us, what your understanding of that is.
It's difficult to get your head around.
Mike's a
very, very intelligent man, but it's been very difficult for me to get my head around it. But I've actually been talking to some people, a lady called Susan and a couple of other people, and they're sending me some documentation. So I'll wait till I can get my head around it a bit more in order to tell you. But when Mike explained it to me a couple of years ago, it all made sense. But it's been a couple of years since I've looked at it because I've been so busy.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been waiting for the mandate, because hopefully what's being produced is a mandate that will explain it clearly so everybody can understand it, and simply mandate that governments implement this type of economy.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a democratic system, again, well, they've got to respect the people's mandate, otherwise it's not a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it? Oh, it must be a fascist state, which means that they've openly declared themselves, because they can't disobey people's mandate. It's simple. It's a democratic system. So if we, the people, hereby mandate that you, our public servants, do the following, they have no option but to comply.
Can I ask you, is there direct democracy as part of the Australian Constitution?
Direct democracy?
Yeah, have you got that as part of the Constitution? Can you, if enough of you decide in Australia that you're not happy with the legislation that's been passed into government, recent legislation, that if you get enough signatures together that you can overrule the legislation?
Well, the thing is that most of the laws are invalid, because most of the laws are state laws that are contrary to the Constitution. And it says in the Constitution that any law that is not consistent with the Constitution is void. But people don't realise that. We're not taught the Constitution in schools. A lot of people don't even know that Australia's got a Constitution.
Sure.
A lot of Australian people, they don't even know it exists because it's not taught in schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it exists, and a lot of people that I know it exists. But basically, you know, Section 109 of our Constitution says that any state law, any law that is inconsistent with the Constitution is invalid to the point of that inconsistency. So, you know, if it is inconsistent, then the Constitution prevails, you know. But mm-hmm. the states just overwrite this because of a thing called the Australia Act that came in 1986. And they believe that they can use the Australia Act to do that, and they always bring it up, yes, according to the Australia Act, blah, blah, blah. But the Australia Act itself says in one section that the Constitution is not affected. And that's it. So it's all, most of it's void. Most of our state legislation is void, according to our Constitution, but people just don't know it, and so they don't enforce it. That's the thing. And you can't change one word of the Constitution without a referendum. They keep having them. They have them every few years to see if we will please change our Constitution, and everybody always votes no. So, but then they don't enforce it, because they just, you know, it's interesting. That's the Australian mentality, you know, like they can, people don't even know we've got a constitution, and yet you can offer them a referendum to ask if we would submit to changes in our constitution, and they'll vote no. then they don't use the thing. They don't enforce it. They don't ever stand in the power that it provides for
but
them.
But it's not their fault, Max, because you know that education was not offered up to them when they were in the schooling system. You see, I don't look at it as I'm not saying that you're saying it's their fault, but the reality is it's not your fault if you're never educated in that reality, in that paradigm, you know?
Oh, yeah. I know that. But the thing is, you've got people here who don't know that we have a constitution.
Yeah.
And yet when the government offers them a referendum asking them if they will submit to change to the constitution, they'll vote no.
Mm-hmm.
They'll vote no on this document that tells them they've got a constitution and will they allow it to be changed? They'll go, no, we don't want it changed. And you can go and ask them a week later, do we have a constitution? They'll go, no, I don't think so.
Fantastic.
It's the fluoride. It's the fluoride and the televisions and the alpha waves. And oh, I love these people.
Is the water fluoride in Australia?
They have very, very short-term memories going on here, you know what I mean?
Is it fluoridated, the water in Australia?
Yeah, mostly. I think the only shire that it isn't fluoridated in Australia is the shire in which I live.
Shire. Very interesting that you say shire.
Shire Reef? A sheriff?
Shire Reef.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I see you've had some fun with that guy over the years, have you?
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of talks with the local council. We haven't let them fluoridate this area. So.
Oh, nice one. You blocked them, did you?
Yeah, but they're bringing it in most of the rest of the country. I mean, they're getting through Queensland now. They've done most of Queensland.
They're starting to. They're only starting to bring it in now, Max.
Well, it's been in the major capital cities for a long time, but it hasn't been in some of the regional districts.
Wow.
And so they're bringing it in all the regional districts, but you know, there's been massive amounts of chlorine and stuff in the regional districts anyway. So,
do you know that Ireland is the only EU country that does have fluoridation of the water, and we're now fighting to get rid of it?
Yeah, well, the Irish people are very active, so they're probably trying to.
They're not as active as the Dutch or the French or the Germans, though, who've had it out for years. You know. We're the only EU country left with fluoridation of the water.
The Dutch, Max, they were so strong about getting it out that they actually changed their constitution to make sure it could never happen again.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking. And it's not only that, it's going down through the river systems and, you know, through all the sewage, and it's getting into the oceans. It's fluoridating all the fish. I mean, you know.
Exactly. It's
pumping massive amounts of this stuff into the environment.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only answer is to educate the masses in any way that we can, and that there isn't any other solution to it, you know. And the only way that can happen, really, is if it gets into the standard education system, that you know, and that becomes part of our history, that this is actually what happened before the empire fell. Look at what they did. What lessons have we learned from the system that was in place? And hopefully I will live to see that day, that my grandchildren might actually learn about the craziness of this current regime.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this starts with the teachers. I mean, the teachers have got to realize that they're operating within a pathological system as well. Because I was actually sitting next to a teacher on the plane. I went down to Adelaide last week and came back, and I was sitting next to a young teacher on the plane. And she was telling me she was amazed at what she actually has to teach these children and how none of it is designed to help the children think and prepare them for the outside world. It's all just designed to keep them on this one path, and how all the test results are changing and all this sort of stuff. I said, yeah, well, it's up to you to change that. It's up to you to question that. And the way you can do that is by uniting with the teachers within your school, talking to the older teachers. Some of these old teachers that have been there for years that saw the way the system did work and the way it's working now, and you have to change it from within the system. And it doesn't matter if the government gives you this particular dictate and tells you you have to operate in this certain way. If this way is detrimental to the kids, then you as a teacher have a moral obligation to do the opposite. And not only that, you need to question the government. Well, and then you need to connect with other schools, and you need to connect, create a teacher's front where you can deal with this situation, because we need you people to start teaching these kids what reality is. You know, and she totally agreed with what I was saying, gave her a copy of the new film.
Brilliant. Well, let me tell you what's been happening here in Kerry, that Aisling and Marta are part of the Awaken Ireland movement, that Marta is Aisling's mother, and Marta is a school teacher, and she got the backing of the principal and brought all the students together, educated them about hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is a waste product from the agricultural industry, phosphate industry and all that sort of stuff, and educated them about the poison that it is, and they actually wrote a song about it, and they ended up going up to the Dáil in the minibus and presenting the Dáil, which is
the Dáil is our version of the Irish Parliament, basically.
The Irish Parliament, and presented the information in the booklet about the fact that it is a highly toxic neurotoxin, and delivered the information to some of the TDs. TDs is an MP, is an Irish version. Chuck Dáil is the Irish version of the MPs, and they were kind of shocked, didn't know how to cope with the information, pretty much ignored it. And what they were told was that the only way that you're going to get the fluoride out of the water is if you bring a lawsuit against the state, and that's actually what's happening right now, and that's being confirmed, that we do have a team, a council. We have a senior counsel, and we have a solicitor that's interested in getting involved and actually bringing the Irish state to court in relation to getting the fluoride out of the water. You know, so that is exactly what we've just been talking about, to use the system that's already there in place to empower people on a local level, get the community involved, Max, and get it into the schools, get the ID into the schools of the reality of these poisons and these different ways of indoctrinating people with information.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's great that you're doing all these sorts of things. Yeah. That's what I mean when I said the Irish are very active. I mean, as far as the free man movements and the sovereignty movement and all this sort of stuff goes, I mean, Ireland is doing massive, massive leaps and bounds in all this sort of stuff. So, I mean, that'd be why your government is throwing all this stuff at you, because you guys are very active over there. It's really good to see.
Yeah.
Well, we're trying our best, and we're going to keep at it. I suppose once you shine the light of awareness on the problems, then you can actually find solutions. And for many years, the Irish people, they've just been bombarded with problems and shell-shocked, really, to be honest with you. And we have a history of rebellion, as you know, and that every generation, for hundreds of years, Ireland has always rebelled. And that hasn't happened since fluoridation in the 60s. And no one has known why. And we've become a very docile nation, and the Greeks actually were walking around with placards saying, "We're not the Irish, we're not going to lie down and take it." But it's starting to change.
There you go. They're giving you a bit of a nudge there, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Max, may I change the subject slightly and ask about Fukushima? I can't even pronounce it properly. I think it's Fukushima in Japan.
Fukushima,
yeah. We have had a media blackout here. Since April, May last year, basically, we have heard nothing about how do you pronounce it?
Fukushima.
Fukushima. We've heard nothing about it.
Fukushima is still melting down. There's three reactors in a state of meltdown. It's still pouring toxic waste into the ocean. It's still pouring toxic waste into the air. Fukushima will... It will contaminate Japan to the point where, I mean, Japan's gone. It's over for Japan as an economic power. Japan's gone. I mean, even here in the shops, all Japanese vegetables have disappeared out of our shops.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously a Japanese vegetable doesn't come with a sign saying maybe radioactive.
Yeah.
Car parts, Japanese cars, all this sort of stuff, Japanese sound equipment, stereos, all these sorts of things. No one's buying it because it may be radioactive.
Are you getting a lot of media news in Australia about the incident?
Absolutely none.
The situation?
Absolutely none.
It's the same here in Europe. There's just no information.
You've got to look online. You've got to go and search Japanese sites. Yeah. I've got friends that send me information as well.
Yeah.
Fortunately, a lot of listeners from my show send me lots of news clippings from their local areas. And that keeps me really updated on what's going on.
Okay,
around the world.
I would be very, I would really appreciate it if you would pass those on to us, because I'm also very interested in this. I've noticed that we've got the Irish, some Irish Association for Radiology. They're responsible for the, you know, the measurements of radiation contamination in the atmosphere, in the soil, and everything. And I noticed that last year on the 12th of April, after the levels were continuously climbing, that they were taken off the net. The online data was taken off the net deliberately. And I cannot find any information at the moment on radiation levels in Ireland. There are none to be had. Now, I've been looking at some shocking YouTube reports, actually. And I don't know whether to believe the it's all fear based. Actually, you know, we are being slowly poisoned. That it's part of Agenda 21. Blah blah blah. What's your opinion on
well,
this?
Well, I don't think it was an accident. I really don't think Fukushima was an accident. You don't put all those reactors there on a
fault line,
junction of four tectonic plates.
It
wasn't an accident. You know, it was an accident waiting to happen. I mean, it wasn't a matter of if; it was a matter of when.
Yeah.
And it's still going. I mean, when you look at Chernobyl, they still talk about how bad Chernobyl was. Well, Fukushima is 10 times worse than Chernobyl, and it's still going. It's completely
uncontained. Still going. That's the thing. Yeah.
You know, it's still pouring nuclear waste into the ocean every minute of every day, and it's pouring into the air every minute of every day.
I saw a report maybe 10 days ago that said in 1 week the radiation levels in the Pacific Ocean had climbed 1,000% in 1 week.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And we hear nothing about it here in Europe.
Well, I believe that it is all part of Agenda 21, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's still pouring into the ocean. And, you know, all of our governments should stop whatever it is they're doing and address this problem, because this isn't a Japanese problem. It's a global problem.
Exactly. It is a global problem.
The fact that our governments are ignoring it speaks volumes. The fact that you're not hearing anything about this on the news speaks volumes.
Yeah.
Even when they do speak about it, they talk about it as the worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl. It's not the worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl. It's the world's worst nuclear disaster, and it's ongoing.
Ongoing, ever, yeah.
Now, it's
been
going
for over a year now. It started in, it was May last year.
That's right.
So it's about a year now.
11th of March last year, actually.
March, was it?
Okay. Yeah, the 11th of March. And I followed the data very closely in the Irish on the Irish website, and the data was given out for 1 month. My birthday is actually in April, so I realized, hey, on the 12th of April, there's no data anymore. That's very unusual, and there hasn't been any since.
Yeah, well, it's very, very bad, and something needs to be done about it. But, I mean, honestly, I don't know what can be done about it. It's almost a perfect disaster, because it's right there on the water table.
For global depopulation.
You can't pump concrete over it. It'll just sink into the water table.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't drill underneath it and contain it from underneath and stop it melting down, because it's water. It's right on the coast. Why would you put this thing right on the coast, you know?
Yeah. It's a recipe for disaster, basically.
It's absolutely a recipe for disaster.
Just to put a skeptic's hat on it there, Max, you know, there are people out there that will say, well, hold on a second now. If the elites have planned this on purpose, how are they going to protect themselves from a nuclear fallout?
Well, it all ties in with the transhumanist thing, I think.
Are you saying that they're superhuman, that they've altered their genetics enough that it won't affect them?
Well, I mean, I can only speculate, but I mean, the fact that this thing is happening, and the fact that it was put in such a dangerous place, you've got to think this was done on purpose. So, what can I say? I mean, if you did a graph and you did a map and you got a computer and you worked out the worst place on Earth you could put a nuclear reactor, it would be Fukushima. So,
yeah, shocking, all right,
yeah.
Yeah, why is it there? So, And it isn't just Fukushima. I mean, there's 52 reactors in Japan. And Japan's the most tectonically active area on Earth.
That's right.
There's more nuclear reactors than any other country on Earth, I think. It's like, well, for the size of the country, I mean, it's only as big as California. It's got 52 nuclear reactors.
Nuts. It's pure nuts. But they don't have any natural resources.
It's a junction of four tectonic plates.
Yeah. Their argument would be that, well, they are, you know, deficient in natural resources. They have to import all of their natural resources, all of their ores and, you know, their coal and their oil and everything has to be imported, you know. So that would be their reasoning for that. That's what the excuse would be.
Well, I don't know, but, I mean, they're all Westinghouse and GE reactors, you know. So they're all, you know, old Phase 1 reactors that are outdated.
Antiques, basically.
Yeah, and then you've got that whole Israeli security team that was working there just before all this happened, and I mean,
no, I haven't heard anything about this, Max.
Well, apparently there was an Israeli team there that were working on the reactor just before it happened, and
are
then
you
you've got to look at things like the Stuxnet virus that caused Chernobyl to melt down, which was an Israeli-based virus. Yeah, you got to look at what is Israel. I mean, and this is nothing anti-Semitic, but what is Israel? Israel is basically an operating platform run by the Rothschilds. That's all Israel is. It's a weapons lab run by the Rothschilds that's designed to create instability in the Middle East and use the Jewish people as the scapegoats for it. You know, it's just why everyone hates the Jews. Well, it's not the Jews. It's whole Zionist sort of system that's run through Israel, which is, of course, an offshoot of the whole Vatican Empire. And, I mean, this we could go on about this. This is
forever,
a whole other show.
Yeah, sure.
But, I mean, that's you know, you've got to – everywhere you see some major disaster around the planet, you can usually find Mossad fingerprints on it somewhere, you know. And people blame Jews, but it's the Mossad, they're just, you know, they're like the terrorist wing of the New World Order. They go out and create all this stuff everywhere. You know, but it's all basically run by the same system. That's just one wing of it, you know.
They're the contractors.
So, I mean, the whole thing is doing something, but it's causing a huge global problem. Whether it's, you know, what the ultimate purpose could be. Well, radioactivity, I mean, it's got to, maybe this will do something with what we're finding in the chemtrails. Maybe it's all part of this whole nanotechnology thing, you know. Maybe they know where the prevailing things are going to go. Maybe they know what areas it's going to infect. Maybe they have a way of shutting it down that we're not aware of. Maybe they have technology that we don't even know exists.
Yeah.
I mean, all I can do is speculate on all of this sort of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But when I look at it, it seems too ridiculous to have ever put a nuclear reactor there. And now that it is melting down, the fact that they're just letting it go and no one's even talking about it, it's like people have forgotten about this.
Exactly.
Thing.
That's what really bothers me, Max.
Yeah, well,
nobody is talking
about
this.
There's got to be a purpose in this.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just acting like it's business as usual. Oh, you go shopping, do this, do that. We're worried about global warming. We're worried about all this sort of stuff. Well, what about Fukushima?
Yeah, stick to your daily routine. Everything is okay, you know. Don't worry about Fukushima. Yeah, we have it under control, but it's far from under control.
Absolutely. So there's got to be some purpose to this. There's the fact of how it's all gone down and how it's being ignored, there's got to be a purpose to it. Because it's too important for, I mean, it's the fuss they made over Chernobyl, and this is 10 times Chernobyl, and they're not even mentioning it. So what's going on? Why is it business as usual? What is the real purpose?
Exactly. Well, I'm adding one and one together, and like yourself, I'm, you know, getting two. That's exactly what you're saying.
This transhumanist thing, it's got to be to do with this transhumanist thing because that would kind of make sense. Well, everything's electromagnetic. I mean, maybe it's a mutation. I mean, I don't know. I can only speculate.
I don't even want to speculate on it. It sounds crazy.
So Max, what's your solution, Max, for your blueprint for a solution then? It's community-based with you, isn't it?
It is. To me, that is our only solution. Now, for people to become aware that there's a problem, to become aware that there's a problem, if you're going to tell them what the problem is, you've got to provide them with the solution and leading by example. You've got to lead by example. You've got to have this community. You've got to talk to people, give out information to people, be friendly, be positive, be empowering, be a pleasure to be around because you have this information. You make people want to be near you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, wow, this guy's always so positive and always so happy. He's always so helpful.
Yeah.
How come my life's so messed up and this guy's got virtually nothing, but he's a really happy guy?
Mm-hmm.
It's because he has a different perspective of reality than me. Well, what's his perspective?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
That's the way I do it, and it's worked wonders with me.
What's happening down under? Is there many groups popping up all over Australia, or what's happening?
Well, there is. I mean, more people in the street are becoming more aware. I give out a lot of information to people. There's a couple of shops in town that have got flyers and give out information to people as well. Give out DVDs to lots of people. And people are becoming aware of it. There's lots of anti-fracking groups. We're making a huge lot of progress with the fracking movement against CSG. I said a couple of few months ago or a year ago even that coal seam gas was going to be an issue that will unite the community because everybody needs water. I think they're doing it in Ireland as well. They're doing it in England. They're doing it everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. You're big into fracking, aren't you, actually?
Yeah, fracking. So this is something that can unite the community. And once you start going to some of these fracking meetings and you start talking to them from a perspective of constitutional law and trust law and stuff like this, and start bringing empowering information to them, how to deal with the legal system in a way that actually works by basically circumventing it and putting it all back into natural law. Things like this.
Yeah.
Always being a human or a man, you know, being flesh and blood. And when you're talking to anyone of authority, talking to the man within the uniform, not the uniform, you know, and always treating people as equals, being respectful, but treating the person you're talking to as another man, another human being, you know, like another. He's not anything special than you. He's just got an outfit on, you know.
Yeah.
And getting people to approach things from this way and from a state of natural law, that's been having a huge effect. Because once people start realizing this through the medium of coal seam gas, which is what's been used to unify the community, then you can start getting all of this different legal perspective into their minds and this different perspective of reality into their minds. And it starts changing from there. And so I think coal seam gas is the catalyst, and I think that that's something that can unite all groups. All of these, the whaling group and the oil group and the homeless group and the starving children group and all these things, you know, people can realize that, look, they're destroying our water now, you know, so this is a serious issue. And if we can unite on this, then we can incorporate all of the other symptoms into this one issue, which is the corruption of government itself.
Exactly.
It only stays to be corrupt. It only exists because we fail to address the very root core of the problem, which is that corruption. That's what we have to do.
Yeah, and that's actually a very important topic here in Ireland at the moment, is actually fracking, because we have something like, is it 5 billion, James?
Five trillion.
5 trillion.
Worth of just gas alone, that's what's come out off the coast of Ireland. You know, there's oil there as well. That the IMF are in, if they bankrupt the country, and that they're trying to take control of all natural resources here, you know, so that they can make profit on it.
Well, yeah, and it's destroying groundwater. That's what it's all about. That's
exactly.
All Agenda 21 again, because
yeah.
We don't need this gas.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I showed in my film that you can get energy from carbon from a film you put on your window.
Yeah, that's, you know? Right. That was on TED recently.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need all of these resources we're dragging out of the earth in order to support our energy needs. We just need to free up some of this free energy technology
free energy that
exists right now.
That's what Paul Byrne actually said.
Have.
That's what Paul Byrne said from Awake in Ireland. You know, we've got like 5 trillion gas and oil reserves off the coast, but we don't even need to touch them. We have other options. We don't even need to go near that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We have many, many other options. And the fact that they're doing this to supposedly support our energy needs, again, you've got to step back, put it on the global stage. Well, what's it really doing? Because we don't need this to support our energy needs. And they know we don't need this to support our energy needs. So what else do you get from fracking? Well, the one result you can guarantee of getting is the destruction of groundwater.
Exactly.
That's why they are fracking. It's to destroy groundwater. It's not to harvest natural gas.
That's actually a topic for another evening, Max. We could spend another 2 hours talking about fracking in Australia and here and the realities of it.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But it all fits in with the same thing. It all fits in with Agenda 21, transhumanism, pushing people into major concentrated cities, getting them out of regional areas because there'll be no groundwater.
Smart zones.
Yeah, right. Putting them all into zones. It's all part of Agenda 21, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so look at this and look at Fukushima and look what's going on. You're seeing the genetic modification of all life on Earth. It's being turned into something else. You know, and it's happening right in front of our faces. All the GM food, all the vaccinations, all the things that are in the chemtrails, Fukushima, the electromagnetic grid that's being set up around the place with all the digital televisions and smart meters and satellite grids and all this sort of stuff. All this is being done for a reason, and it's not what they're telling us. Exactly. And if you step back and look at it, what you see is transhumanism. What you see is the genetic modification, the transmutation of all life on this planet. That's what's happening.
Absolutely.
And that's just by having a look at the whole thing. When you look at it holistically, that's what you see.
Yeah.
And if I'm wrong, well, hey, someone please tell me that I'm wrong. Show me that I'm wrong. But this is what I see when I look at it all. It seems to be right there. And not only that, they tell you that's what they're doing through the subtext in all of their films and television and everything. It's all pointing to this one thing.
To be honest, that's the conclusion I come to too when I observe and, when I'm honest with myself. But I believe we actually still can have the possibility to change things. And it would be great to have you on future programs if you're interested, just to keep us updated on what's going on around the world. There's so many topics we can discuss.
Not a problem. I'd be happy to come on any time you want me to come on.
Yeah.
And look, we can fix this because now it's becoming so in your face that people can be aware of it. And you can't fix it until you're aware of it. So that's what I've tried to say to people was, well, look, here it all is, and here's the opportunity we now have to step into who and what we are.
Exactly.
Because here's what's going to happen if we don't, you know. So we don't want that. Yeah, we want to have the opportunity to be all that we can be.
Exactly.
So, you know, let's step into this and fix this situation.
Absolutely, Max. You know, we just have to keep the good side out, as they say, and just focus on what's positive and what's solutions based. I think if you build up enough energy around the idea of solutions rather than just talking about the problems, you can't ignore the problems. You have to be aware of them, but you also need to focus on what are the solutions. How can you implement solutions? And again, it all comes back down to local community.
Well, it does, because you need the strength of numbers. You know, one person can have it. You can put in a commercial lien. You can do whatever, you know. I mean, you can go through all these avenues that they provide for you to do, or you can simply have strong community that's strong enough and empowered enough to stand up and say, hey, we're taking the world in a different direction now.
Absolutely. Well, John Perkins, you're probably aware of John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Have you come across him in your studies? You have. Well, John was, I was talking to John there recently. He's actually doing an event here on the 27th of May. He's coming over, and there's also Max Kaiser. As we found out today, Max Kaiser is going to come over as well. He's going to be discussing economic fallout around the world and what's really going on behind the scenes with Stacey Herbert as well, his sidekick, his partner, on the Russia Today show, the Kaiser Report. And that's a good event happening on the 27th of May this year in Ireland, and that they feel these people think that Ireland can be, you know, the centre of change because of the small population, because of the history and heritage of the Irish people, that we can together come together and make a good focused change and do it from a grassroots level, push up through and get enough people involved, enough people awakened to bring about real change, you know.
Absolutely. The Irish, as I said, are leading the way. They just have to remember who and what they are, and they're a proud people and a proud race, and they've always led the way in these sorts of things. And I think that's what the Greek are saying. We're not rolling over like the Irish.
Yeah.
Because they're giving you a nudge. They're saying, hey, come on, you guys always led the way. What are you doing? We're here. We're in to bat for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're giving you a bit of a shove. So, yeah, I think you can do it, and I hope that you do. You could be the force that changes Europe.
You know, we're very excited about what's been going on, and we had a Bog Hill event. Bog Hill is in Clare. It's a kind of a holistic place there in the wilds of Clare in West Ireland, and 40 people met up there from all over the country, all different ages. And we had great help there with a professional facilitator, Chris, who allowed the information to flow without egos getting involved and influencing the circle of communication that was going on over the weekend. And from that, the Awaken Ireland movement was born, you know, and it's just growing from strength to strength. We started the show on the back of it. There's a meeting tomorrow that Paul and Sean maybe as well are heading down to, and it's just the top up on the energies that have already been created around the Awaken Ireland movement. And we'll keep you posted, Max, on how that develops, you know.
Oh, good.
Paul, have you got anything else you want to ask Max before we sign off?
I've just sat down again. Sorry, you caught me off guard, James. Not at the moment, but I'm sure I'll have a lot of things I want to ask you in a couple of minutes when you're not there anymore.
Is there anything else you want to highlight, Max, before we sign off?
No, I'm pretty good. Just send people to thecrowhouse.com. That's my website.
Absolutely.
All the stuff that I do is there. All the radio shows are there. All my films are there. It's all there. It's all free. Mm-hmm. So go and check that out when you get a chance.
It's www.crowhouse.com, as far as I know.
Oh, it's just thecrowhouse.com.
Sorry, thecrowhouse.com.
Mm-hmm.
The Crowhouse. Actually, if you go there and click on links and articles, you'll probably find a little bit of information about Fukushima there as well you can catch up on.
Yeah, great. We'll do.
Okay, Max, we're going to leave you go because I'm sure you're a very busy guy and you've got your own show to get prepared for, you know, and it's been great having you on the show. So from myself, James, and
Paul here, thanks very much, Max.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Hope we didn't disturb your break that you've been having, your well-deserved break.
Oh, that's all right. Every time I have a break, it's usually because I've got so much other stuff I need to catch up on, so it's never really a break anyway.
Okay,
so. Well,
listen, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us, and it was really
great listening
to you, and I hope to hear from you soon.
Not a problem. My pleasure, guys.
Hey, great stuff.
Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Good night.
And that was Max Egan talking all the way from Australia. TheCrowHouse.com is his website. And it was great to have him on. We weren't expecting to have him on the show tonight, but brilliant, absolutely wonderful. And as he said, he's willing to come back on again in the future and to discuss other elements of what's going on in his world and in our world. And it's great to have that connection now with Ireland and with Down Under. And we get him on as regularly as needs be.
And thanks again to Murphy O, our researcher, who organized that at very, very short notice.